Hello everybody, and welcome to the latest in the CSM9 Issues panels here at Declarations of War. Today's topic is 0-0, Power Projection, and PvP Balance. These are three distinct topics, but they're really interrelated, and we didn't really have time to break them out into one show apiece, so we're sort of blending them together, and we've got a couple CSM candidates who each have perspectives on that. First of all, we tried to get Manfred Sidious, and I know he was somewhat advertised for this event, but he has apparently been disqualified from running for CSM because his passport has not arrived in time. So we're sort of disappointed about that, but it is what it is. We got the first replacement we could get our hands on, which happened to be Cyan Oviander, so hopefully that'll be as good. We'll see. It's sort of up to him, I guess.
Thanks.
So let's go down and introduce yourselves. Cyan, why don't you start?
Well, like Alex said, my name is Cyan Oviander, and I am a member of Noir Mercenary Group. And I'm focusing on, encouraging the small and medium gang PvP and making sure that it has a place in EVE, and among other things. But as far as PvP goes, that's a big focus of mine.
We also have Angry Mustache.
Hello, I'm Angry Mustache. Currently, I'm a member of Goonswarm Federation. I really stand for... I'm a NOSEC candidate, and I really stand for improving the livability of NOSEC, as well as the way that NOSEC mechanics work, such as SOV and, of course, Warfare.
Can I go on the record, Mustache, and say that I'm sort of offended that you had to ask for our TeamSpeak information? Why doesn't Goonswarm Intelligence already have that on file?
Not relevant enough.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Wow.
Oh. speaking of relevant, we have Gorski Carr here. Gorski, why don't you say a few words to the kind people?
Yeah, sure. I'm Gorski Carr. I've been playing since, 2004, I think. Doing low-sec PvP mostly, and the null-sec small gang PvP. Right now I'm in Elitist Ops in PL, and I'm doing solo PvP and streaming.
And speaking of irrelevant, we have Xander Fina.
Thank you very much for having me on your inferior podcast, Alexiev. My name is Xander Fina. I've been playing EVE for a little over 5 years. You may know me from Crossing Zebras. I fly with the Gentleman's Agreement, which is part of the CFC, and my platform has predominantly stood on the idea of communication between CCP, CSM, and the player base as a whole, and also general NullSec issues, of which there are many at the moment.
I quite heartily agree. So let's get into some of those issues. Now, I've got five questions here, each touching on these topics, and we're going to let the discussion meander a little bit. I reserve the right to ask a follow-up question to any of you, and you guys may comment on one another. And we'll let the discussion go for a bit and then try to move it on. I want to keep this issue panel to about an hour if we can. The first thing is sort of a broad question, but I think it's a good starting point to get your outlook, your philosophy on these issues. What direction would you approach ship balancing from? What are your priorities? What kind of perspective do you bring to the table when the CSM is consulted about these sorts of things? Cyan?
Well, like a lot of things in EVE, when you look at them from certain angles, they look good. And when you apply to them in other ways, they end up kind of broken. So I feel like you have to be able to take something and have it scale from a small to a medium to a large sort of, number-wise, and have it work in all of those areas. So when you're looking at something that might work really, really well in a smaller or medium-sized warfare, but when you throw it up into a huge fleet, it's something broken. Like drones are a perfect example. The drone assist thing is a perfect example of that. And I think that's a really great way to take an approach when you're looking at ship balancing and try to catch problems before they arise.
Mustache?
So I have a kind of a different perspective on ship balancing, is that I think the number one priority for CCP to balance ships is that ships have a use, even if it's, say, marginal or not very generally powerful. As long as they have a niche they can fit into, the ship will still get used. For example, Dictors and Bombers, no matter how bad you make the actual hulls, they'll always get used because they have a special role. And when you look at that perspective, a lot of T2 balancing, for example, hacks, seems kind of lackluster because there's nothing that hacks can do that a T3 can't do. And that's one of the things I think CCP should look at, is removing ships that are strictly better than another.
So, despite the fact that hacks got a buff recently, you don't think that buff is in the right direction?
No, I think right now, except for the Ishtar, which is a special case, T3s can do everything hacks can do and better, but better, and not for an awful lot more expensive. Like a T3 can cost anywhere from 350 up, while a hack costs 200, but a T3 is more than twice as good as a hack.
Alright, Gorski, how about you?
So yeah, with those, the problem with hacks and T3s is, like, the T3 ships are, I think they're less engageable for most, like, fleets. Because they're just, like, straight up better in, like, every point at everything. And, I have to agree that ships have to have a use, and, I think the T3 ships are, like, they're over-tanked or something like that.
Moving away from ship specifics, though, what's your sort of balance philosophy?
I think you should balance from, smaller gangs and up. But, you should still have... There should be, like, nothing that you say, like, a small gang should always win versus a blob, because that's not true, like, in this game. But, like, you should still have a chance if you're able to pilot well.
That's a fair sentiment I think most people would agree with. So we do touch on that small gang versus large-scale warfare in a bit, but, Xander, why don't you finish this section up by talking about your design philosophy? Or balance philosophy, rather.
Yeah, unfortunately, Angry pretty much steals the thunder from me. I am not a fan of simple linear scales or progressive scales when it comes to power versus ISK. I'm a firm believer that all that happens then is, as you progress in SP, you tend to leave the smaller hull classes behind. I'm a firm believer that each ship type, even moving up from frigates and upwards, it has to have its own purpose and its own niche, and it has to be unique and flyable in its own way. And only by making each ship interesting, and even if it doesn't apply to a lot of people, even if it isn't interesting to a lot of people, even if a small subset of pilots enjoy that particular element in that particular ship, then it makes the whole metagame that much more interesting. So giving ships a purpose is a huge thing. I think it's something that Team 5-0 have been doing a great job with so far in the team and the ship rebalancing program. I think we're seeing so many more hulls that were previously totally unviable becoming useful, and it shakes up the game so much. Giving ships a purpose.
Since we're here, I was going to ask this question a bit later, but let's move it up, since this is sort of where the discussion is going. Specifically, how can you, and now this is not like the CSM's not a junior development team, but you will be asked to consult on a lot of these issues, so it's important to know what your thought process is on them. How do you get small gang objectives or small scale style warfare that isn't simply outshined by larger groups of those same ships? So in other words, I have down here a note like Malkanis' Law. Whatever change is done for new players is almost invariably to the much larger advantage of older players. In a similar way, how do you ensure that's not true for making changes to small gangs of ships, or balances to small gangs of ships, or objectives for small gangs of ships, that these larger groups don't just go in and break? And let's start with Mustache this time.
Well, I think this is kind of like a black sheep question, is because that... currently there are ways for a more skilled small gang to successfully engage a large gang. I think like the best example right now is either kiting Ishtars that the Triumvirate uses, or Black Legion's Interdiction Nullified Slippery Pete Tengus. Both of these comps allow a smaller fleet to harass, but harass a larger fleet and basically bite at their ankles, but it doesn't let them kill the large fleet. And I think this is actually kind of the way it should be, that if both parties have roughly the same amount of skill and ISK involvement, I don't think there's actually a reason that the small group should win. I mean, it's not they should have a chance of winning, but it shouldn't be overwhelmingly so. when you look at it from other perspectives, that every single mechanic in Eve is available to everyone, and when you put it take them that way, there's literally no way to make a mechanic that benefits small groups that does not benefit larger groups as well. I mean, for example, on the Ishtar example, the CFC can run kiting Ishtar fleets, but we don't because let's just say that we have piloting issues. But so that's a way that a small group can use their own techniques and skills to not necessarily deliver a killing blow, but at least harass a larger fleet.
And what about in the terms of a Sov mechanic paradigm?
I'm actually gonna say that I don't think small groups should be able to do anything in Sov other than harass, because Sov is some people say that you should be able to go in and disable a jump bridge which you can do with a semi small group of ships, but I don't think you should be able to snap Sov or lock down a station or anything like that, because when you look at it, if small groups can do that, so can large groups. If you believe that, a 10 to 20 man fleet should be able to meaningfully impact Sov warfare, what's to prevent, say, someone like the CFC from saying, okay, instead of rolling a 200 man fleet, we're going to roll you into 10, 20 man fleets and basically ruin all your space at once? There's nothing that can stop that, and that's a fundamental fact of gameplay.
Well, those 200 10-man fleets are a lot easier to kill than one 200-man fleet. Or do you think that's not true?
Can you clarify that? I don't quite get the question here.
A lot of players view the idea of splitting up a blob into several systems simultaneously actually as a viable goal. Like, that's a desirable thing, because those smaller groups are easier on the servers, and they're much more engageable by other groups of players. Even if you can't engage all those gangs at once, you can engage a few of them here and there and have a small gang fight, as opposed to either engaging that 200-man fleet with something that can hurt a 200-man fleet or not engaging them at all.
I think, the point is... I don't think that so-called splitting the blob is a bad idea, but I'm saying that adding in these kind of artificial mechanics that are achievable by 20 to 10 man groups is actually going to be a damper on small groups holding solve, because if you can do that to someone, to a big guy, what can he do to you with the same mechanics, which is ruin your entire life?
Right on. Gorski?
I agree. You can't use strategic objectives to stimulate small gang PvP. And, right now we can, reuse Raptors to, force a fight or, go after home defense fleets. That's, the only way to, actually get a fight. Where, get a good fight. Where both sides want to fight instead of, just a gank.
Right, so how do you generate that? Or is it possible to generate that through mechanics?
I don't know if you should be able to force someone to fight.
Alright, Xander?
So I think this question is a little bit complicated, because I think, unfortunately, the concept of a small gang in 0.0 is more or less dead when the CFC can call up a CTA and get 4 or 5 fleets of Ishtars or Maelstroms or whatever, then the whole small fleet concept kind of goes out the window. Part of my original post in my CSM campaign thread, I'm firmly of the idea of splitting fleets up into different systems. So having different fleets in different systems, I think that's a fantastic idea. And my concept, again, I'm not a game designer, but my idea for that was to have some kind of incursion style effect that went into play in a system. If the sovereignty in that system was in reinforced, for example, and the number of fleets allied fleets within that system incurred some kind of negative effect to all those fleets, and it encouraged you to split fleets up into different systems. It's back of the fag packet, first thoughts of ideas. I mean, I like the idea of splitting fleets up, but I don't think you should split it down into any more than a 2-5-6 man fleet, and I don't think that fleets of 50 guys should be running around snapping solve or breaking jump bridges or anything like that. I don't think that's realistic, and I don't think that's what Nosec's for. I think that actively goes against the whole point of 0.0, in my opinion. I do like the idea, and I think the mobile deployables have done a great job in giving small gangs some sort of purpose. ESS, for example, siphons to a lesser degree. You can generate fights, although I'd rather they had some kind of way to get a notification from them to increase the possibility of that. But it's clear that CCP are looking at ideas for giving objectives to small gangs in 0.0, but I don't think they should be going towards soft directly, no.
Cyan, what's your view?
Well, sort of like Xander, in my original post, I like the idea of splitting fleets up and encouraging them to go around in different systems. I kind of wonder if maybe, Angry, you kind of misunderstood the question, or maybe we are just viewing it differently, because I agree with you at one point. I don't think that it should be possible for a small group to just, you know, go and snatch systems away from, you know, a big area with no real effort. Like, for instance, if some small corporation wanted to attack the CFC, it shouldn't be easy for them, or maybe even feasible, because of the size disparity. But they should be able to survive if someone, you know, more their size is coming around, maybe even a little bit larger. I feel like small groups shouldn't have an easy time at all against a larger group. That just doesn't make any sense. There's no mechanical backing or foundation for that sort of thing at all. But a small group, I feel like it would be great if a small group could harass a larger group to a degree that they may consider if it's worthwhile to hold that area or not. And that, I think, is a cool idea for, you know, taking extraneous things away from large entities that they may not be utilizing. Coupling that with a couple other things, because splitting a fleet up in and of itself isn't going to really help the issue. But that, coupled with other things and other objectives and utilities, does give small gangs a purpose and a reason and a fighting chance in, you know, some fields, but doesn't really make them, doesn't give them like a mechanical advantage where like a large group wouldn't.
Mustache?
Yeah, I sort of kind of want to clarify my point is that when I said that what small gangs shouldn't be able to do is to forcibly take Zolve from a large organization. What they should be able to do is harass ratters and harass their miners, make life very difficult for the people living in that space so that it hurts their morale, and when the time comes for push to shove, they don't want to log in and fight you. That's what small groups, that's what I think their goal should be, and that's partly capable right now, but it's not. But, you know, we have the situation of, if you come and harass me, I'm just going to dock up because you can't do anything about it. One thing, an interesting point is that the ESS that's been recently implemented is kind of like what should be able to be a good target for small groups, but ESS is very poorly implemented right now. And looking on the flip side, a lot of people this has kind of become a meme in the CSM election to ask that, what are you going to do about small groups in 0-0? And I would kind of like to ask the question back: what can small groups do in wormholes? I mean, you're not going to be able to evict a wormhole alliance with a small gang. You need to bring in dreads and carriers and an eviction fleet. You can't take a faction warfare system with a small gang. You can push it to vulnerable, but in the end, you need a big fleet to come shoot that iHub.
Does anyone want to take that question?
Yeah, sure. What's the definition of like a small group here? Is it like 10 people or 50 people?
My definition for small gang warfare has always been about I would say like under 30, under 35, somewhere there.
Oh, okay. Like I usually do gangs of like sub 10 people.
Yeah, so that's like super small gang warfare.
Yeah, it's like pretty different.
That used to be a small gang warfare definition before the game got a lot bigger. But I feel like now, realistically, about 30 people is a fairly... 30 people is about where the line between small and medium warfare starts to blur, so I usually pick that as the cap.
Yeah.
Personally, and it's my podcast, so that's what we'll go with.
Well, on a technicality, I mean, if PL brings 35 supers, yeah, they can have a pretty big effect on Solve.
Yeah, true. But still, like, with my, like, 10 people gangs, like, we don't really attack strategic objectives. Like, we're just looking for a good fight and people who wants to fight.
I guess the general idea I hear most of all is how to change the, well, I'll just dock mentality. How to make that not the dominant strategy to deal with people that are coming into your space. I think Mustache touched on a good point about the ESS, which I agree have been an improvement, but they're still too rare, I think, to really fill that role, although they're an excellent start. But it's a good transition to the next question I have down here, which is about farms and fields. Most of my listeners are going to be familiar with that idea. But basically, it's the idea that you create parts of 00 or all of 00 that are very rich. They're very rich wheat lands that you have all these farmers, these industrial people. They're out there, they're taking food, they're taking livestock, they have this thriving economy, but that economy is very vulnerable to raiders coming in and burning those fields down if the knights in the castle don't come out and help protect the land. That's the TLDR. It's been in the water for a while. I want to ask all the candidates if you still feel that paradigm is the way to go when looking at how to change Solve for the better. If not, what should replace it? And if so, are these steps that CCP is making, the ESS, the mining refining change that's coming out in the next patch, are these the first steps that you want to be looking for? Or, you know, what instead, or how to make them better, that kind of thing. Now let's go with Gorski.
I think it's a good step, like, with the ESS and stuff like that. But I'm not sure, like, I support, like, having, like, a specific system where, like, you only farm in it and you have to defend. I think you should be able to do raptors with, like, you can rat with PvP fits. Because, like, right now your raptor is, like, it's free food, like, everyone can kill those and no one really wants to get farmed. And with small gangs, you really, like, you want to fight people who want to fight, and if they have a PvP fitted ratting ship, they can't fight back instead of, like, just instantly dying.
Also, I wanted to mention a specific thing that this is also designed to fix is the, when players say, oh, I'll just dock, to make the alliance or the larger entity they're attached to somehow feel the pain of them not defending the area. So I don't know if you want to touch on that point as well.
Well, if, like, there's an entity in that area, you can't really, like, farm and you can't get any income, so I guess that's that.
Xander?
Yeah, I mean, the point you raised there, if you're in your ratting ship, poking away at whichever Garista general's causing your local area hassle at the time, and, you know, it comes up on your intel channel that a gang of crows come through and you dock up, then the Alliance does lose something. You know, you're losing ratting taxes for that time you're docked up and that harassment's taking part. Regards the bigger question, farms and fields, I think your question kind of skirts around the main issue with 0.0 at the moment, which I'm sure you're probably coming up to. But the issue is that it is currently more profitable for a 0.0 alliance to own these vast swathes of space and actually do nothing with them other than rent them out. That is the most profitable way to run the 0.0 alliance at the moment, is to rent the space, whether you're comfortable with that as a business model or not. So any kind of mechanic, any changes to how farms and fields are implemented or anything else has to take into account that surely it's better for alliances to actively be using their space. Now, I'm not sure whether sovereignty should be tied into activity in that space, but the current status where it's profitable for CFC, for example, to hold massive area regions in space and do nothing with them themselves. It's fundamentally wrong.
Well, and in that vein, I'm going to challenge you a little bit, Xander. I don't think alliances feel it. When you compare the income they get from moons and renting compared to the income that alliances get from taxes, it's zero. Alliances have no way to tax ratting income, not directly. The
cells
may miss out, but even then, it's usually paltry compared to their alternative income sources.
Well, actually, in 2013, Goonswarm made some like $1.2 trillion off ratting taxes, and that's just Goonwafa itself.
Yeah, I mean, just because there's no mechanic for that in the game, Alexei, I don't think that doesn't happen, because I can assure you, in Gents, the taxes do flow up via Core and are paid directly to alliances.
Okay, so you do transfer. All right. Fair point, then. Are you familiar enough with the finances to make a comment about how much, you know, individual mining and ratting activity contributes compared to, say, renting income? Either Mustache or Xander?
I'm not aware of the high level finances of the CFC or Goonswarm. I have heard in random conversations that the renting income vastly surpasses any other income sources for the CFC at the moment. Per system, it's vastly more profitable.
This is old data from almost a year ago, but from the S2N Citizens Renter disband, we found out that S2N Citizens at the moment, at that time, was making $700 billion a month. And the size of S2N Citizens at the time is roughly similar to the size of Publord right now. So I'm going to say that's probably a decent estimate of how much they're making. I mean, when you look at Pandemic Legion's Renter Alliance, I wouldn't be surprised if they were hauling north of a trillion a month.
Of course, I wouldn't suppose you'd know.
Offhand. Yeah, I don't know the numbers about that.
Yeah,
but it's a lot of risk.
That's all right. So, Cyan, the farms and fields question. Let's get back on track.
Yeah, I'm a fan of farms and fields, mainly because I'm a raider, maybe. I think it's a good idea, not only because it encourages the activity of people who play in kind of the peasant role, I guess, for NullSec alliances. I'm a big proponent of encouraging people to take action in whatever capacity they play the game rather than dock or log off or, you know, stay antisocial or whatever. But I think taking action is a big, big thing. And I want people to log into the game and have to do something to get something, whether that's rat or mine or whatever. They need to be out there in space doing their thing in sort of these soft, unprotected areas, because that's... there's so much money coming from there. And this whole farms and fields idea, again, ties into a lot of other things. It's one issue is not going to, or one solution is not going to fix the issue, but giving farms and fields to the game would encourage those smaller groups again to get out there and take action and to do something and interact with other people, you know, by way of blowing things up. And the more things that are out there, the more farms and fields mechanics, if you want to call it that, that people are using and taking advantage of, the more opportunities there are for people to come in and ruin that day. And you want to get people invested in their system. You want people to care about what happens when someone comes in so they don't just dock. And I think that's the way that the game is set up right now. I don't think people really care. But if you've gone out there and you've worked really hard to get something back and you're just about to reap the rewards, you know, it's like sort of sowing a field and plowing it and planting it and watering it, and you're just about to reap all the crops and someone comes up to burn them down, you're going to go and fight and protect it. And we don't really have that investment right now, I think.
Cool point. Mustache?
I'm going to say that The issue with farms and fields right now is a completely risk and reward problem. That EVE players are not stupid. We will do what is optimal, and what is optimal in the environment right now is to dock up and not do anything when invaders come, because it's simply not worth risking your ship for the crappy ratting income that you get. The only way to get people to fight is to put something that's valuable to fight over. And if I want to try to fight a ratter ganker right now, I gain nothing. I lose my semi-expensive ratting ship, and I lose my ratting income. So there's really no reason, no reward for me to take the risk of fighting them. Not to mention the fact that in the current environment, it's actually quite hard to actually fight the ratter gankers, because they usually run around in interceptors. And interceptors aren't... You can't force an interceptor into a fight. You have to bait them, which means they can control whether they want to fight you or not. And that's a problem for defenders when you have no initiative.
So what sort of incentives and counterattack tools do you think would be necessary? And you don't have to go through a list, but which ones strike as a successful direction for CCP to approach the problem from?
I would like if NullSec ratting sites were more similar to wormhole sites, which is that in order to get the most out of them, you have to put a lot of expensive ships on field, and these expensive ships need a serious fleet to kill. For example, what if a ratting fleet, instead of being one guy and his Ishtar, was three Black Dreads, two Carriers, and a couple of Webbing Lokis, like you see in wormholes? So if you want to try to gank that ratting fleet, you better bring something serious, and because they have to be sieged to reap the rewards, they have to fight you. And that's how this, and that's a kind of a recipe for escalation, that you have to bring something big to fight their some big fleet, and once assets are in play, both sides now have time to react and escalate.
Do you think that sort of escalation is sustainable in Deep 00?
I don't think...
For instance, if Ratters and Deckline, not really at much threat, would be essentially botting heaven. Yes?
I wouldn't say that's true. Right now, Deckline's probably one of the most dangerous solve null regions, that every day you get dozens and dozens of dead ratting ships.
I know, but I'm talking about if they were to move to your essentially requiring capital ships model.
Not just requiring capital ships, but requiring a fleet. If you want it, it's a lot more rewarding to the gankers if you kill all those caps. And I think if they balance the rewards right, there'll be reasons to use expensive ships ratting, and there'll be reasons to put serious fleets to kill those expensive ships, rather than right now, where the optimal thing to do is to not engage at all.
All right. So, moving away from the sort of farms and fieldsy, small gangy, roaming around, touching at the edges thing, let's look at the core of the mechanics. Right now, sovereignty is based 100% on structures, specifically large, effective hit point structures, like really, really large, which you need to grind down to get a reinforcement timer, at which point usually the defender will show up with as many allies as he or she can arm twist into showing up for that timer. This is often cited as like the worst part of sovereignty warfare, and FCs burn out from it all the time. Whole alliances need to take two, three month breaks after some large wars where they conquer a region or multiple regions. There's a situation where typically wars are over, and yet the alliance that's effectively been defeated and completely withdrawn still maintains ownership over several regions of space. And the winners are like, oh god, we have to slog through all this stuff to go conquer it. I think all of you would agree we should move away from this model, and if you don't, please correct me. But I would like the discussion to focus more on the how do we get rid of this while still respecting the idea that Eve is a all time zone situation, and if, say, some Russians attack some people in the United States, they don't want all of their stuff to be gone by the time they wake up in the morning. That kind of stuff. Let's start with Xander on this issue.
It's a really tough question, and it's a tough question because we all know that sovereignty as a mechanic is broken and it doesn't work, and I've read countless solutions to the problem so far, and I don't think any of them are necessarily that much better than what we currently have. My personal solution to the problem would be drop the number of timers. Probably not to one, but I think the number of timers needs to fall. I wouldn't tweak even the EHP figures that much. I think dropping the number of timers has the same effect. I think that Nullsec needs to be more dynamic and a more interesting place, and there needs to be more movement in the map, and there needs to be more exchange of sovereignty between hostile alliances. And I think making systems a little bit easier to capture from one another would be a good thing for everybody. I think you'd see less FCs burn out. I think you'd see more emergent and interesting gameplay. It's a very difficult question because nobody's come up with the perfect solution yet, but that would be my first stab at how I would solve it.
Sorry.
Sort of like Xander mentioned, having a dynamic and sort of fluid mechanic that's really focused around, again, encouraging people to get out there and do it. The specifics are definitely sort of nebulous right now. Personally, in my vision, I don't have any specific mechanics, but I sort of envision, you know, multiple fleets sort of doing a tug of war with one another, you know, fast strikes, moving around, almost like, you know, some battlefield where you're sort of trying to control areas, you're trying to control like a point or whatever. But there's so many of them, you can just have like one big fleet. You can't just plop down and say, all right, well, if you want to take the system, you have to come to us, sort of thing. You know, fast and frantic is something that seems like a great idea. How to exactly implement it hasn't really been discovered, I guess.
Mustache?
So my role in the Halloween War was that of a reconnaissance member, so it was my job to go fly out the timers and record it down and put it up on a timer board. And what I noticed was that even though we might hit 10 to 20, we might reinforce 10 to 20 systems in a night, which is really, really pushing it, these timers don't necessarily come out at the same time. And even if timers come out, you can choose to so-called punt them to the next timer and defend it later. Right now, you essentially have to win three timers to win a system, and if you fail at any one, you go back to step one. So the optimal way of defending is to punt timers, is to space out your timers so you can defend a small number every night until you've basically recovered all the lost timers that you've basically forfeited, and get them on nights that you actually do defend them. And I think the problem to solve that is to, by making a lot of timers come out at the same time. So you can have this one big blob fleet, but you have to defend four things at the exact same time rather than sitting on one IHUB. That would go pretty far in so-called splitting the blob. And the other part is that making losses more than just, oh, we'll just punt it to the next timer and take care of it then. That, say, if you lose an IHUB timer, and okay, you, that's it. And then on the next timer, you take it back. But if you get just, if you say reinforce something over and over, each time it loses a bit of its so-called defensive properties. It's easier to take the next time you do it. And I think another point would be to put, right now timers are set by the defenders. I think one thing that could be done right now is putting more initiative in the hands of the attackers by giving them some limited ways to set time, by allowing the attackers to choose when they want to attack. So kind of like the so-called old pause methods, where the proper way, the way for defenders to time to set their timer was to strong their pause in a certain way, based on the attacker's time zone, instead of saying, okay, we want it to come out at this time, so it will. And attackers had ways to manipulate the timers to their desires by not fully reinforcing on their main time zone and actually putting the pause and reinforce on their off time zone, so it would come out at an unexpected time. Again, it's about initiative. The attackers need some initiative rather than just sitting around waiting for timers to come out that the defenders say it comes out now.
Gorski?
I kind of agree with Saya, like with the multiple like small objectives that you can do. I think it would be like, it sounds fun, like kind of like faction warfare, but I think you need some like major modifications to that to make it work with like big blobs and 0/0.
See, I want to say real quick that Angry, not to pick on you, but if you sort of do what you said where you have all the timers all at one time, you're sort of solves one issue, but the other issue is that you still have these massive EHP structures that have to be ground down, and a new alliance or a new corporation or whatever, they don't have that opportunity. Like, there's just no possible way for them to really compete. Like, it's anyone else that's already in place now, even if they're fighting another group the same size, if that group is already there, they have a distinct advantage. And a group that is trying to just dip its foot in the water for the very first time, it makes it all but impossible for them to sort of get involved.
Well, that's actually another interesting point you bring up, is that how small should be the so-called minimum size for a new corporation, for a new group to try out Sovnol? Because even without these mechanics, a Sovnol alliance still needs immense amounts of infrastructure. You need to have a solid corp of FCs around the clock. You need to have your external auth services. You need to have your intelligence team, your recon team, your finance team. And this amount of overhead isn't exactly small. Like, if you look at Goonswarm, it has, and I think Sion Kumitomo did a presentation on this at Eve Down Under, and he said Goonswarm has something like 300 to 400 managers or overhead staff to manage the organizations of the CFC, and these are reasonably competent people. So if you need 300 to 400 managers, how big of a group would, how small of a group could you go and still justify that overhead?
So I don't think you can, looking at it from, well, the CFC needs this, so this is how much you need to get started, is the absolute worst way to approach this sort of thing. If you're looking at controlling one system, you don't need but a fraction, you know, like it's, you don't need nearly the same amount of logistical support as you do for the CFC. So you can take and hold sovereignty effectively, logistically, with an incredibly small group of people if you could just get and take and hold sovereignty.
Yeah, I mean, mildly intoxicated, held on to their sovereignty. Granted, they were part of the N3 coalition, but the coalition didn't help them much when we had a contract out there. And they were up against Darkness of Despair and all those guys. And they, I mean, it was a breakneck effort. I'm sure keeping that up under any kind of sustained duration would have burnt people out, but they don't have barely any external IT infrastructure. They have very few FCs, certainly didn't have round-the-clock FCs. But with a little hard work and some outside help, it could be done. I think a lot of people are interested in making the soft system not just appeal to say CFC sized entities, but also making sure that when it gets redone, there's room to have 1, 2, 3 system groups that aren't immediately pounced on, and that the system at least theoretically can cater to them too.
And I do want to make clear, like, I'm not saying that the CFC should be, you know, at a disadvantage or a negative or anything in some future concept of mine or anything like that. I think it's awesome what the CFC has been able to do and is doing and will continue to do. And they deserve and will take a place in whatever sovereignty changes may or may not occur in the future, without a doubt. But disregarding the little guy who just wants one tiny system, simply because he doesn't have CFC level logistics backbones, is a huge mistake.
Well, one point I kind of like to make is that another limitation on the entrance of so-called small groups into Sovnol is that why would you want to come to Sovnol when it's literally better for your members and better for your finances literally anywhere else in EVE? One thing I heard from people say is that before, Sovnol was like the place to make money, and you had groups who were tired of HiSec and they would try to go to Sovnol to make money. But right now, Sovnol is not anywhere near close to the best money in EVE. It's probably the worst money is for individuals, but the best money for organizations. And what really determines a Sovnol fight is how much money an organization has. If you're like a small group, you would be much better served going to LoSAC or wormholes, where the individual wallets of your members be much healthier. That you really don't gain anything from trying to be a small group and solve null, because not only is solve warfare tremendously expensive and tremendously time consuming, your members don't actually make that much money in the space that you fought to earn.
But we're not talking about right now. We're talking about in the future when things are different, when maybe fields and farms are in place, where you've got all these new things that have, you know, the face of sovereignty in this conversation, this theoretical place, is not what it is now. It may not be great for a small group to own one system right now, but we're talking about things that are changing that and encouraging them to actually be out there. And I can't imagine a single reason that you would want to discourage a small entity from holding sovereignty, mechanically anyway, that is worth a damn, quite
frankly. It's not a case of discouraging the small gang. How do you do it without... You give me the solution. I mean, we're not game designers here, but give me the solution that isn't effectively disadvantaging the big guy, because that's the only way you can really do it. At the moment, we're seeing an alliance of 14,000 people have their first steps in 0.0 sovereignty, and they're getting their arses handed to them, and they're getting sent home with their tail between their legs. So the numbers game, I think we're focusing far too much here on the numbers side of things. Let's make sovereignty an interesting, dynamic thing that people actively want to take part in, and make that an interesting place to be in EVE Online, rather than focusing so much on the numbers, because... You know, Brave come along and they've been embarrassed. Let's not be about the bush here. They've been embarrassed. Hero's been embarrassed as this came into 0.0, and they've got 14,000 pilots. It's not always about numbers, guys.
I think Xander makes a good point, but on the numbers side of things, you want people to want to be out there. You want it to be dynamic, but one enemy of the dynamism is having something that's like 100 million hit points that you have to go through, and like a fleet of 50 people that are not in super caps can't realistically do in an evening's playtime and not have to call in work the next day, that kind of thing.
But the problem is, if you drop these solve structures EHP enough so that you can take them out with a medium-sized fleet, what can PL do with their 300 supers? Fill you know, all of your space in literally one night, then come back the night after to take it all.
Yeah, if 50 men can take out sovereignty, imagine how many 50-man fleets CFC could send out tomorrow to take out those systems.
Sure. So the question is, well, personally, I always thought if you could, say, cut the effective hit points in half, yeah, you can destroy it in half time or with half as many people in the same time, but you could also repair it on the same token. So I don't think that's necessarily as advantageous to larger groups as you might think. But the other entire question is the structured, you know, that structured grind dynamic, if we can move away from that dynamic entirely...
Well, I think I think you've been kind of edging towards this for a little while now. I think you're kind of implying some kind of sovereignty that's based on ratting or mining fleets or something like that. And that would be horrendous, in my opinion. The whole concept of people...
I'm not edging toward that at all, man.
Okay, well, I apologize.
I mean, there's a lot of people that want an activity-based thing. There's some people who are pushing, say, the faction warfare time-based thing instead of a hit point based thing. There are a lot of different ways that it could be approached, but I just think everybody's in agreement that the current approach sort of sucks for everybody involved.
Yeah, there's no argument there.
I mean, unfortunately, we had to drop Gorski because he's getting a bit late for him in his time zone. So we appreciate him turning up. And Xander, want to finish that answer?
No, I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, we need to figure out some form of solution. At the moment, the sovereignty system in NullSec is fundamentally broken, and it needs to change.
All right, look at the large structure pools of stations and iHubs, and they don't realize that most of the times we're not shooting stations and iHubs, we're doing SBU dances. Like, if the SBU dance part of the game is actually really... really tedious if you get down to it, is that you have to have constant vigilance on your SBUs, otherwise they die, you go back, you form a fleet and kill theirs, and you do it all over again. Like, in one day, two sides might trade some like 20 to 30 SBUs, and those things are 40 million EHP each. I think during the Halloween War, far more SBU's hit points were shot at than Station and iHub hit points.
Good point. Alright guys, our final question deals with power projection. There's been a lot of talk about it, a lot of number crunch about it. Is it too much right now? Is power projection too easy? If so, how would you like to see it changed? And do you think the change should come first, or should content being closer at hand happen first and then power projection changed? Let's go with Cyan.
I think currently power projection is a bit too much, but I wonder, sort of an idealistic version of me wonders, if you could encourage people to sort of contract and be a little bit more local and not have massive amounts of space that are, you know, bordering another massive amount of space held by two organizations. But if you had like dozens and dozens of maybe smaller organizations, if there'd be less incentive to throw your weight around, or even the need to jump around the whole entire galaxy. And I wrote this in my original thread about power projection because it's important that as CSM members, we ensure that whatever changes are suggested don't add unnecessary frustration. It's sort of a fine line between saying, well, we need to bring back power projection, between saying that and saying, well, we need to sort of punish people that use these methods. And we don't want to do that. We don't want to make it more difficult for people to move things around and just make the life or the game a living hell. So, it's a fine line, but I would hope, and maybe too optimistically, that if we could sort of have more local content that people wouldn't it wouldn't be such a problem.
Angry.
Well, I agree that power projection right now is too powerful, in that it's you can cross a galaxy really, really fast, not just on jump bridges, but especially in caps. I think a lot of the problems we see with power projection right now wouldn't be as big of a problem if the way Sov was fought and the way Sov earns money was fixed, so that we wouldn't have to conquer half the galaxy and rent it out in order to make money for the Alliance, so that we wouldn't need all of our supers in one place for a slugfest, instead of having these massive super fleets jumping around fighting as a group, that instead what we could do is have smaller fleets and more of them out so that they're individually more engageable. But I think ultimately the point is that anything including, for example, power projection nerf will have casualties for other aspects of gameplay. For example, if you nerf jump drives, you also nerf jump freighters, and that makes life in Nullsec a lot harder. If you nerf carriers jumping, you also nerf the ability for people to, say, deploy. If you nerf jump clones, you nerf the ability for people to fight in one part of the galaxy and still be able to defend their home in the other. And that's all things SCB needs to think about when they do things like this.
Xander?
Yeah, I want to reflect what the previous two guys have said. I do think Cyan's been a little bit optimistic, unfortunately. I do think it would be great if localized content could work as a kind of pseudo nerf to power projection in and of itself, but I don't think that would happen, unfortunately. I think the moment somebody tackles a Titan, the world will descend on it as it does currently. The problem is that there's so many causes to this problem and so many potential solutions. It's such a big question that you could have easily done a whole panel just on this. Jump clones, there's a huge issue. Jump bridge networks, Titans, there's so many different contributing factors to this problem. And the other major issue is tie-dye, which hasn't been mentioned yet. The moment you have a fight, everybody wants to be in it. The fights get bigger and you end up with BTACR and CCP promoting that throughout the world and gaining great publicity from it. So you can be guaranteed if BTACR happens again, then I'm sure everybody will avoid it and we won't have any issues with tie-dye again. What happens is everybody tries to pile in a fight. That's what happens. Localized content just is not going to solve that. People are always going to want to be there for the moment. I think it does require a fairly serious nerf to Titan Bridge Raging and Jump Bridge networks. We've already seen a fairly recent nerf to Jump Bridge networks and that we can only fit one per system. I think that probably needs to be nerfed even more. Perhaps you get so many per region. Marlona Sky had quite an interesting blog recently where he suggested a certain number of points that allowed you to do so many bridges over a set period of time that recharge over time. There's multiple solutions out there, but power projection is a huge issue. It's a massive issue and it requires a very stringent look at. Fleets move around far too easily at the moment.
So Xander did answer it. The other two sort of glossed over. I want to get you guys a little bit more definitively. Do you think that a power projection nerf should happen first to create room for localized content or a drive for localized content? Or do you think mechanic changes to make content more localized should happen before power projection gets nerfed and then the projection nerf happen after that? Let's go with Mustache and then to Cyan.
Pragmatically, I would like to say the power projection nerf should happen first because it is a more standalone problem than fix all solve. If there are ways to nerf power projection directly that don't mess with as many aspects of the game as, say, fixing all null directly. So I would, if I was CCP, I would definitely look at jump drives first. When people say power projection, it's actually usually not Titan bridges and jump bridges, but rather the ability for capital ships to jump, because they can do so with very little pre-existing infrastructure. If you want to Titan bridge or jump clone, there's actually a fairly limited amount of places you can jump to, but capital ships don't have that limit.
I know from when we discuss power projection, it's capital ship drives, not so much jump bridges. I actually think the one per system not solved it necessarily. I think, you know, there might be room to nerf it more, but I think it's a relatively okay place compared to capital drives. I think Titan bridges actually are a pretty cancerous, a very toxic gameplay element in terms of the EVE ecosystem. But if you guys want to touch on that after I get Cyan's answer, we can. Cyan?
I'd have to agree with Angry here for the first time in this conversation. I think that working on the power projection is not necessarily easier, but can be sort of done now and doesn't have to really be doesn't have to wait for the other things to happen. And you can almost sort of do it in conjunction with and getting it out now or earlier. The earlier, the better with this. You could do this now and get it out early and basically not have to worry about any other sort of connectivity to make it effective. It would still have positive effects on the game as it exists now, and we don't have to have any soft changes to make it, you know, beneficial.
Angry Mustache, do you want to comment on the Titan Bridge assertion that I just made?
I actually don't think Titan Bridges are that. I mean, again, it's a matter of perspective. So I'm primarily a subcap pilot, and I think Titan Bridges are fantastic. They're one of the things that keep making battleship fleets actually viable, because you know how fast battleships warp? If you had to make people jump, even take 10 gates in battleships, you would lose half the fleet before you can get there. That moving in battleships is just that painful. In order to move, the thing about Titan Bridges is what they do is they form an umbrella around a single system where you can hit quite effectively, but outside of that umbrella, your power projection is actually very limited. It's more limited to gates to gates. Nobody would bridge a Titan to a system without at least a safe pause, and you can remove safe pauses. While capitals can jump around carriers and Reds can sign on to a station, dock, undock, and go immediately, perfectly safely. But Titan bridges, you need to have some kind of infrastructure in place. Otherwise, your Titan's as good as dead.
I'd be curious to see how Angry and Xander, you guys would react to the assertion that the capability of Titan bridges, not just the capability, but the proliferation, that they're so available, especially in Sov-0-0, that they've sort of killed off the roaming fleet. That's like a major thing.
I actually think the sovereignty mechanics have contributed to that problem more than power projection directly. I think the sovereignty mechanics, which have led to the current state of ever larger alliances dominating large areas of space and holding that space, has contributed to that issue. It's all intertwined, Alex. It's all kind of tied together, but I wouldn't necessarily put the blame firmly on Titans. And I understand what you're saying about Titan bridging, but Titans aren't in a great place at the moment themselves. If you take bridging away from Titans, then all you've got is a kind of jumpy doomsday platform. That's what you've got at the moment. That's a completely other question altogether, but Titans themselves probably need bridging just to be viable at the moment.
Anger?
Oh, on the point is that we've recently seen BTAC-R and 49-Dash that in the Super Capital Showdown fights that basically define a war, Titans are the only things that work. The side with more Titans and the side with better Titan coordination won those fights handedly, while supercarriers, Dreads, and carriers basically sat around with their thumbs up their asses and couldn't do anything.
What do you think of the interaction between Titans and roaming fleets?
I don't think I'm qualified to comment because I haven't done roaming fleets, and my job with Titans has been mainly bridging them in.
Okay. Well, we're about out of it here, so I'll give each of the candidates 1 minute. 1 minute elevator pitch for your candidacy. Sia?
Well, like I said at the very beginning, I'm very much focused on small, medium, you know, scale warfare, making sure it has a place in EVE, make sure it has a purpose more than just the, you know, quote unquote good fights. But more importantly, I want to encourage people to take action in EVE. I want people to log in and be excited to go and do. And I feel like there's a lot of that lacking in many places of EVE right now. And so taking, you know, all of the community management experience that I've had with other games development companies and applying it to this situation, I feel like is sort of the perfect place for me to be right now.
Angry Mustache?
So the main thing I like to remind everyone is that EVE is not just a game. It's an environment where every variable interacts with every other variable. So when you think about these things, you have to consider how every change would interact with every other change, and that's something that I actually really like to do. So, like for in case of power projection and jump bridges and jump drives, how would it also intercept? How would it also affect logistics and travel, and the basic ability to live and move supplies in NullSec? And well, actually, I'm up. If anyone has questions, I'm up to debate or just talk in my CSM thread. If you can change my mind, good for you.
Xander?
So the CSM needs people who have demonstrably proven that they care about the process, they can work well with other people, and they have a strong work ethic. I would suggest that no one else in the history of the CSM has done more to promote the process than I personally have without actually being elected as a member of the CSM. I've consistently provided content for the community, both in and out of the client, for a couple of years now, sacrificing my own time and personal resources to do so. The CSM acts as a membrane between the players and CCP, and it doesn't matter how hard CSM9 works, if it cannot communicate effectively with both CCP and the player base, it fails as a working body. I believe I can be the person who players feel they can come to with ideas. I know I'll provide regular updates on what CSM9 are doing week by week, and I already have a great working relationship with many devs within CCP. So if you need somebody who understands the game, cares about EVE, that you can talk to, please vote Xander Fina next week in the election. But vote, please, please go and vote. But hopefully I'll be there on your ballot somewhere.
Yes, I echo that. Even if you don't like the answers of any of the candidates here on this panel, please go out there, find candidates who do support and vote. It's extremely important that we maximize turnout this year. And I encourage everyone listening, no matter your issue, to go to, and when the polls open, to cast your votes for one or more candidates. Whoever you like, as many people as you like, for whatever reasons you have. I also want to give a shout to Gorski Carr, who had to leave before he could give his closing statement, but he's quite a fine candidate. I also would like to give a shout out to Manfred Sidious, who could not be here and could not stand for the CSM because of his passport issues. He would have made a great candidate, and I really hope he runs next year. And I also want to give a shout out to the person who replaced him on Pandemic Legion's ballot. Probably would have been a great person to have on this panel, but I found out that Manfred wasn't going to be here about 30 minutes before we started, so I didn't really have a chance to get him. But Major J. Silva, guy I know from way back in the day. So major props to him, and I wish him the best of luck as well. If you're interested in SAV issues, I definitely recommend engaging with these candidates on their threads and engaging with Major Silva on his, because he's got a lot of good ideas up there. And with that, we will close things down. Thank you for listening to the Declarations of War CSM9 issue panels. I hope very much you'll join us for the next one, and you subscribe to the podcast for more awesome content like this. Good hunting, everybody.